Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
Guinness is actually one of the lowest calorie beers on the planet. It has less calories than Budweiser. It has less calories than skim milk and orange juice, if you can believe that.
Drinking on St. Patrick's Day certainly isn't about watching your waistline, but that's interesting to know nonetheless. Brad Dunn talks about three beer cocktails that use Guinness as a base to get you ready for your St. Patty's Day festivities. We hear part two of Harvest Public Media's Science of the Seed series. In the kitchen, Chef Daniel Orr uses collard greens and lettuce barquettes in two dishes. And we chat with farmer Deb McKee Kelly. How does she grow so many beautiful heads of lettuce when there's snow on the ground? Hydroponics in a heated greenhouse, of course. I've got food news duty this week. Happy to bring you three stories that we've been following. New York City's ban on extra-large sugary beverages was supposed to go into effect Tuesday, but a Monday afternoon decision by the New York State Supreme Court quashed that. According to the New York State Supreme Court Judge Milton Tingley, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg overstepped when he skipped the city council to bring his plan to ban large sugary drinks directly to the Board of Health. The ban would have capped the size of sugary drinks at 16 ounces for restaurants, movie theaters, and other concessions. Bloomberg and lawyer Michael Cardozo have said they will appeal the court's decision, arguing that New York City's Board of Health sets example for the rest of the country. The board banned smoking in bars and restaurants in 2002. Artificial trans fats were banned from menus in 2006. Meanwhile, Mississippi lawmakers are determined to stop a soda bill similar to the one proposed by Bloomberg from ever getting off the ground. The so-called anti-Bloomberg bill would prevent counties from creating laws that cap soda sizes or require posting calorie counts, another Bloomberg measure. Mississippi has one of the highest adult obesity rates in the nation. Speaking of labeling calorie counts, the Food and Drug Administration is admitting that the implementation of national menu labeling will be an uphill battle. In accordance with a provision of the 2010 healthcare law, chain restaurants, convenience stores, and supermarkets would be required to post calorie counts. The legislation was modeled after laws already in effect in New York City that require chains to prominently post calories on their menus. The problem is that while chain restaurants are largely on board, with some already voluntarily posting calorie counts, supermarkets and convenience stores are complaining that labeling potentially thousands of products would be extremely expensive and drive up food prices. The FDA has said it expects to release national labeling rules this spring. And last year, scientists found that just two servings a day of processed meat increased a person's risk of cancer. Now, in a study printed Thursday in BMC Medicine, researchers have found even stronger evidence that processed meat is linked to serious health problems. The study tracked the health of nearly 500,000 men and women from 10 European countries for an average of 13 years. In addition to processed meat consumption, other risk factors were taken into account, including whether or not the participants were smokers or were obese. As it turns out, those with a high intake of processed meat, meat that has been salted or cured in some way for the sake of preservation, were more likely to die prematurely. 1 in 17 monitored in the study died, and the risk increased with higher daily processed meat consumption. Cancer and heart problems were the biggest factors. Nearly 10,000 died of cancer, while 5,500 died from heart disease. You can read more about these stories on our website, eartheats.org, and get connected to us on Facebook and Twitter for the latest updates all week. Just search for Earth Eats. In a case argued last month before the U.S. Supreme Court, Indiana farmer Vernon Bowman challenged the reach of Monsanto's patent rights on Roundup Ready soybeans. But the rights on the first genetically modified seeds actually expire next year. Grant Gerlach of Harvest Public Media reports on how the introduction of genetic seeds will or won't fit into the science and business of GM crops.
Soybeans with Monsanto's Roundup Ready gene first showed up in the field in 1996. Today, more than 90% of the beans grown in the U.S. are Roundup Ready. There's also Roundup corn, cotton, canola, alfalfa, and even sugar beets. When the original Roundup gene goes off patent next year, it will be the first time a major biotech trait has gone generic. Tom Clemente is a plant geneticist at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
The question we're coming up now is, in ag biotech, is what happens when these things come off patent? And it's still convoluted because it's not straightforward. It's like, I have a new wiper blade. It's not the same thing.
C-Tech Genetics sells seed to farmers in Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, and Missouri. Inside their warehouse in Fremont, Nebraska, pallets are stacked with sacks of seed. And in a small enclosure, a worker carefully pours seed corn into manila envelopes. The seed will be planted in test plots this spring. C-Tech co-owner Dennis Brocht explains the blue-green chemical coating on the corn.
Yep, there's a fungicide and then there's actually an insecticide with that too.
On the inside, the corn is loaded with not one, but three gene traits. It's called a triple stack. Almost all of C-Tech's seeds are genetically modified. Brocht pays royalties to companies like Monsanto for rights to their technology. Farmers have choices besides Roundup One beans these days. Monsanto released Roundup Ready 2 in 2009. Bayer has a herbicide-tolerant soybean called Liberty Link. But Brocht says many farmers still like the original.
Yeah, today our top-selling bean is a Roundup Ready 1 soybean. That's true. And it was our highest-yielding bean this past year, too.
Brocht says he'll continue offering those soybeans after Roundup 1 goes off patent when he no longer has to pay royalties. That means savings for farmers. Brocht estimates a $10 discount on a $40 bag of seed, 25%.
To me, we don't need to overthink the combine. You know, we put a lot of investment into our research. You know, we go with the ones that obviously yield the most and, you know, provide the best combination of agronomics.
That's the window that opens up for farmers when Roundup One goes generic, cheaper seed that still works. But it's not clear how wide that window will open. You see, the ideal for some farmers would be to pack up beans from the field to reuse as seed the next spring. But Monsanto has taken more than 140 farmers to court for trying to do that with Roundup Ready beans. Indiana farmer Vernon Bowman is at the Supreme Court because he argues the patent should not apply the second time around. So when the patent expires, can farmers start bagging their Roundup Ready beans? Dennis Brocht says not necessarily.
With seed, it gets a little bit more complicated than that, so it's beyond just the trait. It's trait and genetics.
Brocht says seeds have multiple layers of legal protection. The Roundup One trait may go generic, but it's probably paired with a seed variety that has its own separate patent. It's called plant variety protection. Tom Clemente at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln says the idea behind the patents is to help cover the cost of innovation.
The blockbusters that do make it through have to cover the loss of all the stuff that didn't make it through, right? So there's give and take. Now, there's fairness in things, right? And the fairness has come up. Once the patent's over, there should be generic versions available.
But there's one more reason there's likely a limited window for generic Roundup Ready seed, and that's international trade. To allow exports of Roundup Ready soybeans, Monsanto prepared reams of research to convince regulators in places like China, Japan, and the European Union that the beans were safe. Clemente says it would be hard to replicate that effort.
When you got that deep of pockets, you know, you can do it. But a small little startup company or a university, they're never going to be able to do it. Not even close.
Monsanto has pledged to maintain export agreements for Roundup One through the year 2021. The question is whether any competitors will be prepared to take up the job after that. If they don't, it may be a sign that the gene that changed the course of agriculture has finally grown obsolete. I'm Grant Gerlach, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of WFIU and other public media stations across the Midwest. Tune in next week for part 3 of Harvest Public Media's Science of the Seed series. Last week, Brad Dunn was here talking about Irish whiskeys for St. Patrick's Day. I interrupted him during a rather busy lunch hour at the Uptown Cafe.
Sure. Do you want to talk about some beer cocktails? Okay.
Whereas Irish whiskey is something they take pride in making and perfecting in Ireland, our topic today, beer cocktails, are quite an American creation. Our three very straightforward beer cocktails use Guinness as the base. Guinness could be the smart choice for beer lovers looking to avoid developing a belly.
Guinness is actually one of the lowest calorie beers on the planet. It has less calories than Budweiser. It has less calories than skim milk and orange juice, if you can believe that. Just because it has a dark color doesn't mean that it's necessarily caloric. A lot of them are, obviously, but Guinness is a very, very low-calorie beer, and people are shocked to know that because it is so rich and creamy. The color comes from the roasting of the grain. It's actually made with barley, so it's roasted barley. Its roasted portion is roasted very, very dark and gives that rich black color.
An Irish car bomb maybe isn't as much a cocktail as it is an oversized shot. Dunn says you end up chugging basically half a pint of Guinness. He wants to give you a little info about the name first off so that you know before you drink.
If you ever go to Ireland, do not order a car bomb and do not order a black and tan. You will be refused.
Really?
Absolutely. It's extremely offensive. Could you imagine going into Manhattan and ordering a Twin Towers? The black and tan were government forces that opposed the IRA after World War I, and there were many atrocities associated with it. A lot of Irish civilians were killed, and their uniform was black and tan. So there is a little bit of reference to that. Regarding the Irish car bomb, I mean, we all know that Irish car bombs, you know, were obviously a terrorist device. And so, but they are wildly popular, and if you like milkshakes, fill a pint glass about halfway with Guinness, get a little shot glass, half and half with any Irish whiskey of your choice, a little Irish cream, and line them up for your friends, say a toast, drop them in your glass, and you'll see it'll start sort of curdling immediately. So you need to drink them very, very quickly. And that's part of the fun of the Irish car bomb. But they're absolutely delicious. It has a sort of a chocolatey, I mean, it tastes like a chocolate milkshake. Another really popular cocktail is the black and tan that we talked about. Guinness on top and Bass on the bottom. Now you can use any other type of pale ale.
Bass is a pale ale?
Bass is a pale ale. Also the half and half. You'd use Guinness and traditionally Harp lager. And if you don't have Harp lager, any of these brands, any other lighter style of beer, we don't have Harp on tap, so we mix. If we do a half and half, we'll do it with Bell's lager. Bell's is out of Kalamazoo, Michigan. And you have to use the back of a soup spoon and pour the Guinness very slowly so it sort of drizzles like a spring Irish rain over the top of the beer.
Yeah, and because the point here is to have the separate drinks. You're not mixing this up.
Yeah, if you mix them together, it's poor technique. There are some beers out there that actually do mix them together. They're sort of pre-made commercial offerings of black and tan. But a properly poured half and half or black and tan, you have to, you know, do it very slowly, and there should be that gorgeous separation. You should see that. It's very attractive. A lot of people are drawn to it when someone orders one at the bar. And it's interesting to note that even though Guinness is, it looks black, it's technically ruby, but it looks black, it floats on top. Now, that would go against what you would think.
With all the different beers on tap, not to mention the several dozen bottles of booze behind the bar, what's Brad's fancy for his first drink on St. Patrick's Day?
Oh, I mean, a Guinness.
Not going to break from the norm?
You know, there are times to be unique and there are times to be traditional. I think St. Patty's Day is a great time to just enjoy a shot and a beer.
Thanks, Brad.
Cheers.
Get lots more advice on wine and beer and beverages from Brad Dunn on our website, eartheats.org. He's the sommelier and beverage director at the Uptown Cafe. Down in New Orleans, coming up.
The nice thing about our hydroponic setup is if it doesn't sell, I can take it back and put it, the roots are still there, I can put it right back in the system. So let it grow for another week.
That's Deb McKee Kelly of Good Life Farms. If she doesn't sell her 120 heads of lettuce at the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market today, they won't go to waste. And then in the kitchen, Chef Daniel Orr uses some local greens in a couple very easy recipes. Hear more coming up. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Every week, we speak with authors putting out everything from cookbooks to food history books. Our book today is Funny Food, 365 Fun, Silly, Creative Breakfasts by Bill and Claire Wurzel. It's a picture book that shows step by step how to transform breakfast foods into whimsical characters, like a grapefruit monkey face.
Well, you know, these breakfasts started out, they were made for Claire. And there was no really thought of doing a book.
Here's 1 minute with the authors of Funny Food, Bill and Claire Wurzel.
I think I started playing with my food when I met Claire. It was just, you know, we always had a great time. We're married 50 years. We're still having a great time.
I mean, just this morning, as a matter of fact, what is typical is Bill will ask me, so what do you want to have for breakfast? And this morning I had the most incredible scrambled egg that was actually a little chick with different colored tomatoes on it.
What I've been doing is I've been more conscious of making it accessible for people. Some people say, well, I'm not an artist, you know, even if it's putting four raisins on a little piece of pineapple.
In fact, it's sort of odd that this is even in the cookbook category. It's more, I would say, a lookbook. You know, look at the food and let it inspire you to do your own.
Look, when you really boil it down, it's romance. In this case, I did it for my wife. I love her. That's what it's all about. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Okay. Bye-bye. Read more about Funny Food on our website and see the beachscape Bill created using seasonal Indiana ingredients like strawberries, asparagus, and greens. Thanks, Bill. We love it. EarthEats.org. I'm at the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market again this week. After today, there are only two more Saturdays of the winter market in the Harmony School. A staple at the market all season has been gorgeous greens, like the lettuce, arugula, and basil at this table.
Need to replenish here. There might be.
Let's try one of these.
Thank you very much.
I'll give you enough.
Yeah, I'm Deb McKee Kelly, and we're Good Life Farms. We grow hydroponically in heated greenhouses. We've been growing hydroponic for almost 4 years now. We started growing in the field, and then we switched to hydroponics a few years later for efficiency and productivity.
Can you just give me a brief explanation of what hydroponic growing is all about?
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's just growing in water. You're growing with the roots suspended in water that's infused with nutrients from mineral salts.
And this allows you to grow year-round?
Yes, we grow year-round. Well, the heaters in the greenhouse allow us to grow year-round. I mean, anybody could grow year-round if they heated their greenhouses. So.
How many heads of lettuce do you think you'll sell today?
Today we will sell probably about 120 heads of lettuce. Yeah. Because I brought about 120 and I'll sell out. The nice thing about our hydroponic setup is if it doesn't sell, I can take it back and put it, the roots are still there, I can put it right back in the system. So let it grow for another week.
Good Life Farms is located in Eminence, Indiana. Connect with them either at the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market on the remaining Saturday mornings in the month of March from 9 to noon or on our website, eartheats.org. Thank you. those gorgeous greens for sale at the market. Let's go ahead and cook with some of them. A couple weeks ago, Chef Daniel Orr prepared a massaged kale salad that was reminiscent of a traditional Brazilian dish. Our first recipe today is the real deal. Here is his Brazilian-style collard greens.
Today we're going to make a Brazilian dish, which is called couve. And in Brazil, they serve it with their national dish, which is called feijoada. And that is a black bean and pork stew that they put everything but the oink in. So this is the couve, which we call collard greens. And you want to pick some really nice, fresh-looking ones. We're going to remove the most of the main stem here. The great thing about collard greens and cabbage and Brussels sprouts, all these are late winter greens. All right, these will still be in the garden into December, and depending on how the weather goes that year, you can even pick some of these into early January. Okay, now what we're going to do for this dish. Now, a lot of times with collard greens and other greens, they're cooked a long time. They're stewed with a lot of bacon and pork parts. But what we want to have is a nice accompaniment to go with kind of a stewed dish. This would also be great with just a simple light fish on top or a grilled chicken breast. So you can use it in a lot of different ways. Okay, what you want to do with this, which is a little different than most collard green dishes, is you're going to cut them as finely as you can. You're forming what the French call a chiffonade, which means thin ribbon. What this allows you to do is to have collard greens without having them stew for, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes, or if you're my grandmother, 3 hours. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to chop some ginger. Now, a lot of people don't know that the best way to peel ginger is actually with a spoon. So what you do is you take your spoon and you just rake it across the ginger root, and we're just going to mince this up. Now, when you mince ginger, what you want to do is cut it across the grain. After you've made those little slices, you just stack those up, cut them into a julienne or matchstick cut, and then when you turn them again and you cut them again, you're going to have a brunoise or a fine, fine dice. Now I have the rest of my ingredients prepared here, and we're going to take it to the stove. For the couve, or the collard greens, I want to have a nice large pan with a lot of surface area, and what I'm going to do is add some extra virgin olive oil to that. Anytime you're sautéing something, you want to have your pan hot and then add your cold oil. And what that will do is it'll help prevent sticking. All right, we're going to add our onions. Got some red onions. Add some of that nice ginger and the garlic. Okay, I'm just going to stir that up. I'm going to add that nice thinly cut collard to this. And I'm just going to stir to incorporate it. And basically all we want to do is wilt the collard greens. And you can already see that this would make a really wonderful bed to put underneath a lot of different things. Okay, so you see how this is kind of wilted. I'm going to season it with the lemon zest, a little bit of salt and pepper. Okay, I'm going to give it a little taste. That's nice. It's wholesome. It has that kind of minerally flavor of the cruciferous greens. Okay, we're just going to mound this up. Classically, in Brazil, you'd have some orange slices with your feijoada, so I'm going to decorate the collard greens with some orange segments. And then I also have some roasted tomatoes that we use a lot here at Farm. I always love the red and green in the wintertime. It brings you back those vibrant colors of the spring and summer, even though it's cold outside.
In this next recipe serves as an edible bowl for our wild rice, pecan, and pear mixture.
What do you know about wild rice?
I know that it's tasty and it's brown.
Okay, and is it rice?
I'm going to say no because of that look on your face right now.
It's actually a grass. It's a water grass. It did grow in northern Indiana in the dune sections in the marshlands around Lake Michigan, but it's much more well-known up in the lakes of Michigan and Wisconsin. The Native Americans grew it, and they would go by in their canoes and shake the dried seeds off the grasses into their canoes and go home and use that. We can now buy it. It's much easier than going out in a canoe. So you see that it's a long, thin, dark, black to brown seed. Again, it's a good idea always to wash any of your grains. And then what you do is you just put it with some water and boil it until it blooms, okay? So when it blooms, all the seed pods open up and kind of split. And they actually look like kind of like little canoes. And what I do is when I boil my rice, I add a little bit of chopped onions, salt and pepper, a little bit of olive oil, and that's it. And we're just going to do a fun little salad with this. This is the perfect thing to make when you're having some friends come over to have some cocktails. This is the perfect thing to serve in little barquettes of endive. So, you know the Belgian endive, which are the yellow things? You cut off the base, and you can open them up and make little boats out of them. And then stuff them with this wild rice and pear salad with pecans. And you've got a great little past hors d'oeuvre that's healthy and fresh. The nuttiness of the rice really goes well with other nuts. So you could use some pecans, which I'm using. They've been lightly toasted. I'm just going to chop them up so they're about the same size as the rice. Okay, and to that I'm going to add a couple slices of red Anjou pear, which will give it a nice color. This is also going to have a little sweetness to it and a little crunch. Okay, to this you can add whatever kind of herbs you like. Chopped basil, chopped chervil, chopped cilantro, whatever you like you can add to it. You know, at Earth Eats we're pretty loose here, you know. We give you ideas and you go out there and make them your own and then you don't even have to give us credit. All right, I'm going to put a little bit of salt and pepper. I'm going to add a little bit of olive oil. Okay, we're going to add a little bit of lemon zest. And with any salad, you need a little bit of acid. So today I'm going to use some orange juice because I want to play off that sweetness of the pears. Okay, I'm just going to stir that up well. Give her a little taste test. I think it's pretty good. Let's give her a little try. I'll give you a little lettuce leaf. That's our salute to a wonderful native grain that the Native Americans harvested and lived through the winter on. And now we've kind of updated it and made it a really fun food to eat by turning it into a little barquette or boat that's perfect for any cocktail party or even a very light lunch.
Another thing about wild rice is that you can grind it into a flour, put it in a spice grinder and grind it down, and then add it to different breads and baked goods. That's especially useful for folks looking for gluten-free alternatives. Check out photos of both of these dishes and follow the recipes at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ben Alfred, Aabon Binder, Brad Dunn, Sarah Gordon, Deb McKee-Kelly, Lou Ann Johnson, Liz Leslie, Chef Daniel Orr, and the entire team at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Thanks for tuning in today, folks. Till next week, happy eating. I'm Annie Corrigan.